More bubble trouble this week on Scrambled Eggs. Welcome in, everyone. I'm Joe McCann. Phil Bush here with you on your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Phil, Team Bubble Watch is in full effect.
Yeah, we got to play with – I don't have a good bubble joke. I'm just so depressed.
We're going to talk about what happened in the Providence game, what could happen here. This is our last regular season podcast, Phil, when you think about it.
That's true.
We may not have that many more podcasts, depending on how things go over the next few weeks. But we'll get to that in just a minute, and we'll talk about the bubble and, gosh, what went wrong with Providence in the Providence game. And I guess we'll kind of start there, Phil. For the week that was, it was great to get that win over St. John's in convincing fashion so as to not fall off the face of the earth as far as the bubble goes. But boy, that loss against Providence on Saturday was a tough one to stomach just because you're playing a fellow bubble team on the road, double-digit lead, and with 7.5 minutes to play, you just stop playing offense, more or less.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing that's probably the most frustrating is the defense. Again, I feel like a couple of times now we've had a conversation around how the defense didn't let us down, but somehow the offense did. Like, when they managed to get the defense just good enough to win pretty handily, they seemed to, just collapse on the offensive end. I think I saw somewhere with 7.5 minutes left. No, with 6:58 left when the Providence guard missed the layup, Marquette had something like a 96.7%
win probability charts make you so sad. Don't look at win probability charts. It's tough when you look back of, if Marquette doesn't make the tournament, Phil, we will have at least three, maybe four or five games that we'll look back and say, that's where Marquette let one slip away that we shouldn't have.
This is the second late game. I mean, we were ahead in this game, but this is the second time this season that we had a chance to win at the end of the game and choked on it a little bit against Providence.
Yeah, both times it came down to Reinhardt. I don't know if the play was necessarily drawn up for Reinhardt this time, but it didn't fall for him again. And the offense just looked out of sorts. Paint Touches posted kind of a still of the final play, and it looked like Juwan driving to the back. I thought Juwan actually had the layup if he would have let it go. I needed to see it from another angle, but he had Howard and Rousey both out there. Wide open if they could have gotten the ball out to either one of those guys. But I'm not sure exactly what was drawn up, but it didn't work. And that's the bummer. And, gosh, to let a double-digit lead slip away and fall back to 500 in conference again when you're on the bubble, Phil, every loss hurts. There's no such thing. When you're on the bubble, every loss feels like the end of the world. And so there's still a path to the tournament in my mind, but you just can't help but kick yourself thinking, man, is this loss going to cost us the tournament? Who knows what's going to happen over the next two games here. But for me, that one felt like, man, we really let one slip away there.
Yeah,
I've been using we a lot early on today.
Well, I mean, I guess to kind of put the emotion of it aside, I guess I'd ask the question. So, yeah, we were up big. We were up 12 points with 7 minutes to go. And quite frankly, it's the reverse of the Villanova game, right? I mean, we were down 11 or 12 points with 7 minutes to go. So it's probably as depressing as that one was exhilarating. But if Marquette had been trailing 2-3 points the whole way and ended up losing that game, does that game feel as bad or as devastating to the title or to the tournament hopes as the way it actually went down? Are we getting concerned about the tournament hopes because of the way they lost?
No, I'm concerned just the fact that it was a loss personally. The fact that that Marquette let a win slip away like that just adds to the frustration. But I thought going into the Providence game, while it was not a season over kind of loss, I didn't think like if Marquette had lost it, that it would be a season ender. But I thought it's one you really want because you don't want to have a sweep at the hands of a team you're fighting for a spot with. And I thought losing to Providence for a second time would be a bad look on the resume, and I still think it is. And the fact that they had the double-digit lead and let it slip away just kind of adds to frustration for me. It certainly – I still think – I guess there's no proof of it now, but I still think Marquette's a better team than Providence. I really do. But
yeah, I agree with you.
Providence made shots, and they got it done, so I guess maybe Providence is a better team than Marquette. And, you know, you look at Providence's schedule, Phil. This is something we'll talk about a little later, but they're probably going to win out – and, you know, get to 10-8 because their last two games are DePaul and St. John's.
Yeah, so it's shaping entirely, up pretty easy for them, huh?
Yeah, they're gonna finish ahead of Marquette in the standings, whether by outright or by tiebreaker, by having a head-to-head sweep over Marquette. So that's a bummer for me. Yeah, the fact that they let a lead slip away doesn't add a ton to me as far as being disappointed that they lost. I really wanted that win for Marquette, but it just I'm just a little more frustrated that that was another win when every win's going to count when you're stacking up the chips, when you go into the committee asking to be in the tournament. It's frustrating to let that one slip away.
Yeah, I get it. And it was a very frustrating game, but the way I look at it is part of that game, especially when they were giving away the lead late in the game, some of it was just shots not falling. I mean, there was probably two or three, including a Juwan Johnson layup that were practically down and then popped out. I mean, I don't know how much I take away from that game as bad coaching, bad playing down the stretch, and just pure bad luck. You know,
Yeah, well, one thing I do want to address about the game, well, let's go ahead and knock this out, was I'm not sure it should have been played.
I don't think it should have been played at all, quite frankly.
Yeah, you know, look, I'm not going to say it's the reason Marquette lost, to be clear about this. I mean, both teams were playing on the same floor. But it was just so dangerous for both teams to be playing in a critical game where the floor was very slippery. And thankfully, that's the big win I can take out of that game, is that Marquette left Providence with all of their ACLs intact. No major injuries happened in that game. But that's embarrassing for the Big East and for Dunkin' Donuts Center to have those conditions and for the floor to be that slick. Because in my opinion, watching the game in the second half, I thought the guys were playing at half speed because both sides were. Because obviously, understandably, everybody was afraid of, you know, tearing up their legs, you know, slipping and sliding. And I think, you know, not a whole lot of guys drove to the basket aggressively. And, you know, nobody was really moving terribly fast because they were afraid they were going to slip and fall.
Well, I two things about that. One, it fundamentally changed the rules of the game. The officials agreed if someone slipped, they weren't going to call it a turnover. And that's just fundamentally no longer basketball. Like, so why are you, if you have to make that decision, why are you playing the game? And the other point real quick I want to make on that is Dwayne Wilson's minutes were limited in this game. I have no proof of this, but I really have a sneaking suspicion with his groin injury that he's had, you know, off and on throughout this season. I think his minutes were limited because they were concerned that he might re-inflame that groin injury slipping.
That is an interesting point. I saw somebody tweeting about that earlier. I hadn't really thought of that. I think everyone was kind of in the mode of, oh, Wojo didn't play Dwayne. You know, totally screwed it up down the stretch. That may have actually been a legit factor in not playing Wilson. You know, I thought during the game that at the speed they were playing with no one driving to the basket, really, because of fear of slipping and getting injured, I thought that actually favored Marquette a bit. Because if you're going to just be standing there and taking jump shots, I think that actually favors Marquette, especially as a team that really doesn't protect the rim very well. But when you put it that way, that maybe that could be a reason Dwayne hardly played in the second half, especially down the stretch when the lead was slipping away. Maybe that was a factor. And again, I don't want to blame the loss on the floor, but I do think it was dangerous that the game was even played. What was the solution? I don't know. But you had to get the game in. The game had to be played.
Why couldn't it be played on Sunday? I mean, last year there was the blizzard, and they pushed the St. John's game back from Saturday to Sunday when they had the blizzard in New York City.
Yeah, and I guess maybe the issue would be a court because there was a hockey game the next day. So I don't think it – because, like, they would have had to keep the ice beneath the court again. But You know, how many colleges are in Boston? Could you have found one court in Boston somewhere that you could have
Right.
say, look, guys, we need to play 20 minutes of basketball on this court? And yeah, it would screw all the fans that had tickets, but the game had to be played.
Right.
So I would think in a desperate situation for the player's safety, they could have found a regulation college basketball court somewhere between Providence and Boston that they could have played one half of basketball on to keep everybody safe and play an actual game in a game that was really important to both teams.
Well, and I was watching without sound on. What were the announcers saying about it?
Brendan Haywood, he was the color guy, and he was saying basically the entire second half that they should call the game. He said, like, you know, of course he's a former player. Remember him
Right.
at North Carolina. He said, man, my knees hurt every time one of these guys goes down. Because I'm holding my breath every time somebody falls. It's hurt. He says it's hurting me watching these guys play. And like the announcers kept talking like they were going to stop it. And like Haywood kept saying they should stop it. So I thought like they were definitely saying they may need to do something about this court. So yeah, that was kind of the general feeling on the broadcast that it's a little ridiculous that they're playing the game.
Yeah, and it just again, they had a 12-point lead. Who knows? But I mean, again, Dwayne Wilson's on the bench. Well, if that was a contributing factor, you're taking your best perimeter defender. I mean, between him and Cheatham, one of your best perimeter defenders off the court because you may be concerned about the conditions. I mean, is that any way you want to have a what could be a decisively deciding game? Leading to it's just a bad look for the Big East, and I haven't seen anything out of the Big East as a result of that. I saw on Twitter something about the Big East officials left a handwritten note saying direct all questions regarding the playing conditions to the Big East office, and it's like, come on, like, yeah, it just it's I'm still a little worked up about it. Clearly, I can't form the words. It's very, very frustrating. I mean, that loss was frustrating, but just to play, like major basketball games on an ice rink is just
Yeah,
terrible.
but my biggest 'cause it was dangerous for the players. I mean,
Yes.
guys on both teams could have been seriously hurt,
Well, what
and
would have
you know,
happened
both
if
of
someone did blow out an ACL? How? What? I mean, like,
they,
literally.
that is just a then that is just a catastrophic embarrassment. Because if either one of those teams loses a key player with, you know, 2 or 3 games to go before you're trying to prove yourself to make the tournament, I mean, you may have essentially ended their season if, you know, you caused them either one of those teams to lose a player. So I just wanted to get that out of the way and talk about that for the game. Again, it's not why Marquette lost necessarily. They were both playing on the same floor, but in my opinion, they somebody should. Do I know what? I don't know what the perfect solution was, but I think there was a better solution than just play.
Yeah,
I don't think
it
so.
just it was as if no one wanted to be the adult in the room, and quite. Let me ask one last question on this. Do you think Wojo should have refused to play in the second half?
Maybe it's easy to say now that they lost.
Right. Well, but
Like
again, I don't think it's not per se the reason they lost. They lost for all sorts of reasons other than the court.
yeah, but I guess if I mean he was there on the court, so I mean, he and his probably talked to his players and his assistant coaches, and he saw the court himself. If he thought it was truly dangerous, he should have refused to play. But I guess he thought it was good enough, so I guess it was good enough.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I've seen his quote saying that court wasn't good enough to play on and they shouldn't have played. But if you don't, like, if they said you have to play or you're forfeit, say that. Like, put that out there that they told us we had to play or we were forfeiting, because that's different than you saw the court was dangerous. You said you saw the court was not good. You sent your players out anyway. You lost, and then you blame it on the court a little bit, right? I
Yeah,
mean, that's.
I would hope that would not be the case, that they would force a forfeit. I mean, if the court was legitimately unsafe, I think you could, appeal to the Big East and say, look, I don't want my players to get hurt. I've got guys here who have had trouble with groin injuries and Achilles this season, and I can't risk losing them as I'm trying to fight for a tournament spot here. It is in our best interest to play on a safe basketball court somewhere, even if we have to go to a local high school gym. Well, high school wouldn't have regulation three-point line, but you know what I mean. You got to find a safe place to play, and they didn't.
Yeah, and somebody needs to ask the AD and Wojo that directly. Were you given the option or not, or what did you think about it? And let's see. I mean, it just matters because that was it. I mean, not only was it was dangerous, it was kind of ugly basketball.
It was. You know, getting back to real reasons why Marquette did lose the game, the foul trouble was a huge issue.
Yep.
Particularly, you know, since Luke Fisher's lost his starting spot, Paint Touches tweeted out earlier on Sunday that he's only played 38 minutes and he's had like 15 fouls or something like. Or it was something. It was an absurd number of fouls. Let me see if I can find the stat. But as you react to that, let me see if I can find that. But it is Luke has not necessarily responded well to his benching.
Yeah, it's been a weird season for him. He struggled.
It is 15 fouls in 38 minutes.
That's atrocious.
That is fouling out three times in just
two
a little
games.
Over. It's just a little over.
Oh no, one game.
12. Yeah.
Yeah, fouling out three times in one full game, almost one full game.
Yeah. Amazing.
And he's had an up and down season, right? I mean, non-conference he was pretty decent. He started to struggle going into conference play, culminated with the Butler game where he was atrocious. Wojo kind of read him the riot act, and he talked about how he was thinking too much and wanted to just settle back in and you know, play without thinking, and he kind of had a stretch there where he was the core keeping the team competitive, and now since he got benched, he has just turned into a non-factor, or worse, not even a non-factor, a negative factor. I mean, you cannot play defense with him on the court, and he's fouling so fast that Helt is having to play a lot of minutes, and Helt's struggling with foul trouble.
Yeah, I mean, Marquette had to play with last, what was it, like 3 or 4 minutes of that game with no big men? I mean, they had to go with the small lineup with Hauser in the middle. And that certainly wasn't ideal down the stretch.
And that further exacerbated the offensive rebounding problems we had. You know, and having neither Helt nor Fisher available in the last 4 minutes is just mind-boggling. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, do you think it's that he's psychologically damaged from the benching?
I don't know. Maybe is he trying too hard?
Yeah.
In trying to get in there and make the most out of his minutes and trying to overcompensate and just committing silly fouls, because Marquette's going to need him if they want to win these last two games, which they may have to avoid playing on the first day of the Big East tournament. We'll get to that in a minute, but
yeah,
hopefully this is just a little mini funk and he can just kind of embrace his role of coming off the bench and just we gotta get more than just a few minutes a game out of him, because he's kind of been almost a ghost. I mean, like, gosh, like I said, 15 fouls in 38 minutes.
Yeah.
He's playing like, you know, 12, 13 minutes a game.
Right. And we're lacking his offensive firepower as a result. I mean, Matt Helt has played very well the last couple of games.
Yep, he has.
But,
he's done a good job.
You know, so I'm not saying that this is a negative on Helt, but Helt is not the same player yet that Luke Fisher is on the offensive end. So without Fisher at least getting quality minutes, I mean, they should probably be splitting time 50-50 at this point. But you just can't with Luke. I mean, he's committing, and they're not just fouls, like legitimate fouls. They're dumb fouls. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember in the St. John's game, he came in, he had four fouls, and Helt had just picked up his fourth foul, and Fisher comes in and not less than 12 seconds later goes and hacks somebody across the head trying for some silly block when we were already up 15 with like 3 minutes to go, and Fisher gets fouled out of the game. And it's like, I mean, that was just dumb.
Yeah, you mentioned you didn't hear the sound during the last game. Brendan Haywood actually was kind of making fun of Fisher in the last, when Fisher came in with four fouls. Haywood said, "What's your over under and how many minutes he plays before he fouls out?" He goes, "I'm going to go 2.5," and he lasted like 90 seconds.
I mean, that's telling. So, I mean, is that Fisher? Is that coaching? Is that frustration? What?
I mean, that's I would put that more on Fisher
for sure.
I mean, he's a senior, man. I mean, yeah. I mean, this is his fourth,
fifth
year,
senior.
No, he's not a fifth year.
Well, yeah, I guess he's a four and a half year senior.
Well, I mean, he transferred in the mid-semester, oh, yeah, so he did not sit out a year.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
He's been in college for 4 years. He's played 3 years, basically. But still, he's been in college for 4 years. He should have some more discipline. That's the bottom line. And that's what Marquette's going to need out of him.
One other oddity in that game. What do you make of the minutes distribution? Caden Reinhart played the most minutes of any of the players in that game, 35, and Hanif and Dwayne were both, and we touched on Dwayne, you know, we've got a little bit of a conspiracy theory there with Dwayne, but Dwayne only played 10 minutes, and Hanif only played 11. What do you make of that?
Wojo, for better or for worse, he trusts Caden Reinhart more than anyone on that team.
I struggle with that.
I do too. I'm not sure I get it. I fully acknowledge that we do not win the Villanova game without Caden Reinhart, but Reinhart is Wojo's guy. He is, and he's going to ride or die with him, man. He wants him on the floor in clutch situations. He wants him shooting the ball late in the game. And he just wants him out there. And maybe it's maybe that's out of necessity because he needs a little more size out there on the wing because he's got so many smaller guys. But yeah, Reinhart is Wojo's guy. And even though he's lost his starting spot, Wojo likes having him out there. And he trusts him more than he trusts anybody else. I hope that the reason Dwayne didn't play is because of the injury, because that would actually make sense to me.
Right.
I hope it's not because of Wojo suddenly forgot he's on the team.
That's part of what I think there needs to be some explanation, because I think people were kind of okay with Wojo and could see the light at the end of the tunnel with Wojo, but you look at that Providence game, the way they choked it away, the minimum number of Wilson minutes. You know, whether they should have played or not, some of the things he said after the game, and you kind of go, you know, was this a regression for Wojo as a coach? You know, kind of what he drew up at the end of the game, his personnel decisions. He kind of won people over with the lineup change, and you know, it's like he gave it all back.
Right. You know, it has been a roller coaster of evaluations for Wojo for us this year, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We go quickly from I'm not sure to maybe he's getting it to now he's in over his head again to all right, he definitely has it going now to now he's forgotten everything and back and forth and what have you. You know, I was talking, having a Twitter conversation with Mark Strotman of Paint Touches fame. And he, you know, he asked an interesting question. I'll pose it to you. He said, he meant it in regards to evaluating Wojo. Does making the tournament become? Does it really matter at this point? As far as obviously it matters for the team, but if as far as evaluating Wojo, does like whether this committee selects Marquette on Selection Sunday? Does that change how you evaluate Wojo this year? Because I think we kind of. We kind of know what we have, I think, for this year. Marquette's going to go in with a resume of probably 18, 19 wins and 9-9 conference record, probably in Big East play, somewhere between 8 and 10 or 10 and 8. Does whether or not they hear that you hear the name called, would that drastically affect how you feel about Wojo for this year?
No, I don't think it does at all. I mean, I think we'll evaluate. I'll evaluate at the end of the regular season what I think we have, because you know the postseason, both in the conference tournament and the NCAA, should we make it or the NIT? I would think we're an NIT lock at this point, but
I would hope so.
But
I would
I think those tend to be crapshoots, and you know, especially if it's your first postseason, I'm not gonna. I'm not going to put too much stock in, especially with such an up and down team. I'm not going to put a lot of stock into how well you perform in the NCAA should you make it. But at the end of the regular season, I think we have enough, and it doesn't really matter whether they end up in the NCAA or not. Because, but this is the dichotomy, right? This team, especially if they're an NIT lock, they have demonstrable proof that they're better this year than they were last year. And last year they were demonstrably better than the year before that. Is that good enough?
Both true.
You know, yeah. So, you know.
I think that's certainly a reason why, you know, I mean, let's be honest. There is a strong Fire Wojo contingent on the message boards and Twitter and whatnot.
Yep.
And I think the fact that, like you said, they can definitely claim progress in each of the past two seasons. That I don't think there's any way there would be a coaching change made, even if Marquette loses its next three and is bounced in the first round of the NIT. I think he is on the
safest of safe seats by all accounts.
Absolutely, he is,
and he should be. Not,
yeah, he has shown progress. Now, how much progress? We'll have to maybe stack that up at the end of the year, like you said. We'll see how many. Because the funny thing is, Phil, and I said, I know this sounds ridiculous to say right now, but if Marquette gets in the tournament and then all of a sudden they shoot the lights out and like win two games, you know, Wojo could get an extension out of this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes postseason success greatly accelerates the nationwide opinion of a coach, right?
Right.
You know, like a coach could, if he goes out in the first round, he's Rick Barnes. But if he goes two rounds deep, he is Shaka Smart, rising star in the coaching community. So, right. Like, you know, just a couple wins in March, drastically, right or wrong, it drastically affects the way you look at a coach. So that's why, you know, we'll see where everything stacks up at the end. But I think Wojo should largely be judged on what has happened in the regular season, both positive and negative. And as you said, Phil, I think there's enough to look at to say they have taken another step forward, and you hope there will be another next year and the year after that.
Right. Now, so you take a look, and we're in complete agreement. Like I said, the postseason is such a crapshoot. Matchups matter, all of that stuff. But so if you look at this season, you say, okay, we've progressed certainly. And there's probably counting this Providence game, there's probably five games you look back at and you say, if we got just one of those five games, how much of a better position we're in? You know, so you've got both Providence games. You've got Butler on the road.
Seton Hall.
You've got Seton Hall on the road, and you've probably got the Pitt game.
Right. So I'd say, yeah, all five of those games are games that very late in the game I thought we had.
Correct. And or at least, you know, like in the case of the Butler game, we should have had, talk about collapses, we should have had them the whole game. But if you look at that and you say, it depends on whether you're an optimist or a pessimist, right? Is if you look at it and you say, with those, you know, if the record's the same and you got those five games, if with next year's roster we run into the same kind of, let's say we played the same schedule with the experience and the talent that'll be on the roster next year, if you flip one or two of those games, all of a sudden now you're talking about going 11-7 in conference or something like that as a potential, you know. But I mean, you could look at it the other way, right? There's probably a couple of games we won late that could have flipped
Villanova
that could have flipped the other way, and you're talking about being 7-11. So I mean, I think I've seen, we'll see with the last two games, because it's going to be tough to bounce back from this Providence loss again, because it has so much weight, and there was, you know, that victory was in our hands. We'll see how they bounce back. But I've seen enough that Wojo is certainly safe, and by everything I'm hearing, he's well, you know, certainly safe. But the question is next season becomes, if they don't make the tournament this season, next season becomes the put up or shut up season, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's why when you talk about whether making the tournament matters, it matters big time for Wojo, because if he makes the tournament this year and say they take a tiny step back next year and then have maybe a decent recruiting class coming in, I think there would be a lot of excitement for going into the new building. But if you miss the tournament this year, miss it again next year, I think there would be a lot of like people hand-wringing saying, are we going in the right direction or not?
Well, I think if they miss it this year and they miss it next year, I think the majority of the people would become anti-Wojo. I think right now it's relatively small.
Yeah, I just think the people who are anti-Wojo now, they just speak the loudest.
Right.
Yeah, like, I think those are the ones, like, the people who like Wojo and are patient with him aren't necessarily singing from the mountaintops how much they love him. They're just kind of like, you know what, let's just see.
Right.
And that's kind of where I am. It's like, you know, let's let it ride out another year or two and see how it goes. And there's still plenty of time left this year. It's, you know, who knows what can happen over these next two games, Phil. Xavier and Creighton, you're going, you know, Xavier on the road, Creighton at home, both pretty close, like, close games according to the spreads on KenPom. You know, they have Marquette as a slight underdog at Xavier and a slight favorite at home against Creighton. So, you know, if you can win both of those, which I'm not sure I would bet on, you'd be in pretty good shape for the tournament. But if you lose them both, you're almost certainly heading to the NIT.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. I think you have to win both to get in the NCAA. If you win one of the two, you're...
You know, this is like one, you know, for all the jokes about Team Bubble Watch, you know, Marquette, you know, that's something that we kind of adopted. You know, Andy Glockner, who's a basketball writer, college basketball writer, and he kind of gave us that name when he was writing for, I guess, Sports Illustrated it was. And thing is, as much as we have kind of embraced that label, I only remember really one time in the last, like, 10 or 15 years where on Selection Sunday, I wasn't sure if Marquette was getting in. Like, I think that was, like, that the 2011 team, right? Lazar Hayward's senior year.
Yep. The Midgets.
And we were an 11 seed, so we just barely got in. But it seems like every other year, even though we were kind of bouncing on the bubble for most of the season, almost every other season, though, Marquette got a couple wins late in the year, and we all said, all right, we're definitely in. We're in for sure. And we were.
Right.
Or either the other way, that we just, like, say the buzzes last season where the team just totally collapsed and we all knew we were out heading into Selection Sunday.
Yep.
This one year, no matter what happens over the next 2 weeks, we are going to be very nervous on Selection Sunday unless either A, Marquette loses their next three, or B, they win the Big East tournament. Anything short of that, we will be – anything in between, we will be nervous on Selection Sunday.
I agree to a – I certainly agree on the losing end, right? But I think if we win the next two and we win at least one – because I think if we win the next two, we'll probably end up being the sixth seed in the Big East tournament, I think.
Yeah, see, I was kind of going through the projections for the Big East, the last week of the Big East regular season. You know, Marquette could use a little bit of help, and the one thing that bums me out is that Villanova and Butler, the two teams who you would hope would be playing a team you want to lose, they both only have one game this week. They're both on their bye. Villanova's playing Georgetown, Butler is playing Seton Hall, so you hope they can beat Seton Hall. So that would help Marquette if Butler can beat Seton Hall. But you're looking at the way the standings are now. You got Villanova at the top. They've already clinched the title because they have a two game lead with only one Big East game left to play. Butler has clinched the two seed as well because they are two games clear of Creighton, with only one game to play for them. Then so you got Creighton at 9-7. And then you go all the way down to St. John's at 7-9. So between 3 and 8, that could really jumble up quite a bit over the next week, depending on what happens. So Marquette, if things go great, they could possibly finish third. If things go poorly, I think even at their worst, they would probably still win a tiebreaker. I don't want to get into the tiebreakers, but I still think they'd finish seventh. Now, you know, the thing I've kind of been saying for a few weeks, Phil, is I've always kind of felt 9 and most of the year I've been saying 10 and 8 is the number you want to get to in the Big East. And then over the last few weeks, as the bracket projections keep coming out, I thought maybe 9 and 9 would be good enough. One thing that I didn't take into account that is now kind of clear to me is that Marquette, if they go 9 and 9, say they win one, lose one this week, they could still finish seventh, which would mean a first-round date with DePaul in the Big East tournament, which helps you not at all.
Right, so right. Nothing but badness can happen there.
See, that's my concern, is if, say, Marquette goes 9 and 9, and then they have to play DePaul, that win doesn't get you in. only bad things could happen. Like, you play DePaul and you lose, then you're definitely out. So I think Marquette, that for that reason, I think Marquette needs to win both of these games this week to ensure they don't finish seventh. Because, you know, I would hate to have to, A, play DePaul, and then that game is normally a short turnaround.
Yep.
Like, it depends on who is the late game, but you could be staring a situation where you play at, you know, 7 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday and then turn around and play at noon on Thursday. And, like, that's like that. So that's happened to teams before, and I guess that's the punishment for finishing low in the standings. The lesson there is don't finish seventh. So that is a big concern that I hadn't taken into account, is that saying all along, well, if they go 9-9 and just get one win in the Big East tournament, that should be enough. Well, it's not going to be enough if that one win is DePaul.
Right.
So I almost want to say there's a little more pressure to win both of these games, get to 10-8, and if you do that, you're almost certainly not finishing seventh. You'll almost certainly get one bye, and it's possible you could get a double bye if you finish 10-8.
Yeah, well, yeah, if you move all the way up to third. Yeah, it does become – well, and the other reason winning both is very critical is Xavier is on a heck of a – you think we've got a slide at times. Xavier's lost five in a row.
You know, I saw Seth Davis tweet out, this is the first time Xavier has lost five games in a row since, I think, 1982.
That seems like a long time.
That is a long, long time. Like, wow. I don't know. I wonder when the last time Marquette lost five in a row. Five in a row is a lot.
Yeah.
So, but, like, poor Xavier. That's the thing. I feel bad for Xavier, and maybe not to get too far off topic, but the committee might have a really tough decision with Xavier. Like, based on their body of work, Xavier should certainly be in the tournament. But if you're judging Xavier as they are now, I don't think Xavier is a tournament team in what they are and what they will be when they take the floor as a tournament in the tournament. Like, are you going to, like, would you stick Xavier and Dayton? But, like, would they be that low? And if Xavier, the big fear, if I were a Xavier fan, I would be very afraid of, one, losing to Marquette, and then their last game is DePaul, and then the bottom falling out and losing to DePaul. Then I would be very afraid of missing the tournament entirely, while I would have, like, when I would have put Xavier as a lock in the tournament a month ago. Xavier is in a little bit of, and like I said, the committee's going to have a tough decision. I still think they'll kind of reward them for their body of work and put them in, but they are on, I think they are kind of in a rough spot right now.
Yeah, well, it gets really interesting, because if Marquette beats Xavier, that hurts Xavier's ear, you know, significantly. Again, that would make them six losses in a row. I don't think even in this current incarnation that Xavier would lose to DePaul, but let's say Marquette beats Xavier, that Xavier victory is a little less substantial than it looked 2 weeks ago, right? Like, when we were looking at the schedule and what's the road to 10-8, or does 9-9 get us in? Oh, we were saying, well, a win over Xavier, that means a lot. If Xavier's gone 1 of 6 in the last 7 games of the Big East regular season, and, you know, and Marquette's going to put that on the resume, that it just doesn't look as good, which no. Kind of begs the, you know, reinforces the question, or reinforces the point that you have to win the last two. You know, because you got to get both Xavier and Creighton on the resume, you know, a sweep over Creighton especially, because Creighton's also, you know, they're not playing as poorly, but they've been struggling a little bit without Watson as well. And so wins on paper against Xavier and Creighton are great, but when you dig down, they're not going to be as substantial. So you really need both of those wins to make a difference.
Yeah, Marquette should definitely be approaching this week like they are out of the tournament right now. Like they should approach it like they have to play their way in. Like, they, granted, as crazy as it sounds, like going 9-9 and then maybe losing to someone other than DePaul, Marquette might still get in when you look at the way the rest of the bubble is shaping up, but you don't want to leave that to chance. Marquette should look at it saying, we have to prove something this week if we want to make the tournament. And so I think it is critical to their tournament hopes that they win both of these games. And the way Xavier's been playing, I don't think going to Cincinnati and winning is impossible. I think Marquette could actually do that. I feel bad for Xavier, but it's every man for himself when it comes to tournament bids. And then you get Creighton at home, which I mean, I think it's going to be a challenge. Obviously, I think, like you said, Creighton's playing better, but Marquette's beaten them before, and we'll see what happens in the rematch in the Bradley Center on Senior Day. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting that Wednesday game. It will be interesting against Xavier simply because Georgetown and Seton Hall and St. John's and Creighton will have played each other previously, and then Providence and DePaul. But you would assume Providence, you know, unless they actually remove the basketball court and play on the ice, you would assume that Providence would beat DePaul. But, you know, a St. John's victory over Creighton or a Georgetown victory over Seton Hall, like, that could change, you know, could change things up, or, you know.
Yeah, if Georgetown wants to do us a solid and knock off Seton Hall, I would greatly appreciate it.
If
Georgetown wants to have, like, one last decent game for JT3 this season, I would appreciate it if it was this week against Seton Hall.
Now, there's a coach on the hot seat.
Yeah, I will believe that Georgetown will part with him when I see it, but it begs the question, what does JT3 have to do to get fired?
Have his father not be alive anymore?
Don't say that.
Well, I'm just saying, you asked the question.
He's record-wise, I think he has done everything necessary to be dismissed. But that's another topic for another podcast. I would appreciate good efforts against Seton Hall.
Yeah, but you know, so let's do a little scenario here. So let's say St. John's beats Creighton by, you know, somehow, some way.
It's in Omaha.
Yeah. So let's say some miracle and Georgetown or Seton Hall beats Georgetown. So right. So Seton Hall goes to 9-8. Creighton goes to 9-8. St. John's goes to 8-9, and Providence wins. So Providence would go to 9-8 as well. If we beat Xavier, there's like a five-way tie for third place, which means that the Seton Hall Butler game and the Providence St. John's game means like everything, plus the Marquette, you know, Creighton game. Like it could get crazy real fast.
It could get pretty ridiculous here, yes, down the stretch. If we have a bunch of teams at nine and nine right in the middle, or just have it, you know. Yeah, I don't want to go through all the tiebreakers, but yeah, it's going to be a wild last few weeks. It's going to be a wild Saturday for sure when it all kind of shakes out in the final games.
Right. Well, and that's why, like, where you finish in the Big East from a ranking schedule, you know, in terms of 1 through 7, I don't think anyone should really be looking at that absolute number, because, you know, if it shakes out a Creighton at 7, I think they're mathematically able to end up at 7. But if Creighton finishes 7th in the Big East, that's an entirely different 7th than Marquette at 7 in the Big East.
Yeah.
You know, like, because if Creighton finishes that low, they're still getting into the tournament. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Creighton's getting in.
You know, sure. And so it'll be interesting. But, I mean, the other thing to keep in mind is the bubble is atrocious. Like, awful.
Yeah, I feel like we say that every year, but
worst I can remember.
Yeah, I feel like we have said that every year since the field expanded to 68. But it does seem like, it seems like Marquette has to, like, put in a little extra effort to be out of the tournament.
Yes.
I think, like, there were some projections today that actually had Marquette move up after the Providence loss.
Yeah, just well, I mean,
some of the other losses bubble teams suffered caused that, of course.
Well, and this is why RPI is so ridiculous, because even in a loss, our RPI improved. So if the RPI continues to improve and we end up somewhere in the 50s, that was the lone argument. I shouldn't say the lone argument, but that was the majority of the argument that was being made against Marquette being in the tournament, was that their RPI was so bad. Right. So if you get one or two wins this week, the RPI ends up in the 50s. That argument kind of goes away. I mean, there's other arguments to be made, but it's much less clear cut versus other teams like Illinois State and teams like that to get in, right?
Yeah, and like, there's just so few teams outside of the top six conferences that are competing for at-large bids, that I think it boosts Marquette. It's still not impossible that seven Big East teams could get in.
Right.
I do think there's going to be someone's going to fall off at the end. There'll be six. I think someone's going to like just get beat up and lose a couple games down the stretch and lose early in the Big East tournament and get left out. I hope that's not Marquette, but it very well could be. If Marquette goes either 9-9 or 8-10 in the conference and then takes an early exit from the Big East tournament, I think they could be the Big East team that doesn't get in. But as of now, quite a few bracketologists out there do have seven Big East teams in, and the ones that only have six have like the last team is like one of the first four out. I think most of them still have Providence as the last Big East team, despite them sweeping Marquette. That Providence is like the last one clawing to get in of the seven. So
yeah, we're going to be in for a heck of a week of basketball. That's for sure.
Yeah, I was joking. They should watch the selection show in the bubble on campus. The new
yeah, the lacrosse bubble
with the lacrosse bubble that should be renamed the Andy Glockner Memorial Team Bubble Watch Bubble on Marquette's campus. So yeah, it's there's going to be a lot of drama this week, and I hope they can get two wins. If you're asking me for predictions for this week, Phil, I'm going to say – actually, I'm going to go the opposite of KenPom predictions. I'm going to say they beat Xavier, who is just in a tailspin right now, but I say they will lose at home to Creighton.
I think they beat Xavier for sure. Oh, I shouldn't say for sure. That came out entirely too easy.
Yeah, Xavier played well against Butler on Sunday. They just came up short.
Yeah, I think they beat Xavier – you know, it being senior day, emotional, certain podcasters are going to be in the arena for that game.
Yeah, there will be a special guest in the arena, Greg Elliott. yeah, Greg Elliott is going to be, you know, the recruit Marquette's been after for a few weeks now. He was actually at the Providence game. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
He was there at the Providence as a guest of the Friars, of course, because they are now in the mix for his services, along with Michigan State and Marquette and a few others. So be aware that there will be an important recruit in the building, Greg Elliott, who is deciding between Marquette and a few others. So if you're there, be loud, be enthusiastic, show what kind of crowd Greg Elliott could be playing in front of as well. And yes, there may or may not be two podcasters in attendance for this game on Saturday as well.
Yes, but I you know what? I'm putting my optimistic hat back on for this season.
It's so dangerous.
It is so dangerous, but you know what? I think there's enough there, two wins. If the games were reversed and we were playing Creighton on the road and Xavier at home, I would say 1-1. But the fact that we're getting the more at least right now it appears the more difficult of the two games at home, I think that gives us enough juice to win both games.
Well, that would be delightful, and I hope you're right. And I just fear the bottom falling out and them losing both, because then I think your Marquette's definitely out if that happens.
Let's put it this way: if they lose the Xavier game, I think they lose the Creighton game.
I could see that. I could see that for sure. But I think this team is committed to toying with our emotions for at least two more weeks. We are going to have drama on Selection Sunday, guaranteed. We will all be biting our nails, having no idea if Marquette's in or out. That is my prediction for Selection Sunday. A lot of stress and antacids. Team Bubble Watch is back in full effect.
And we're going to earn it this time.
Yeah, we are truly Team Bubble Watch because we have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. But I'm saying 1-1 this week, and the drama continues for another week going into the Big East tournament. I just hope Marquette doesn't finish seventh, because that's my fear, is having to play DePaul where nothing good happens.
Yes, nothing good at all.
Well, that's going to be just about it for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. As always, we thank you guys for listening. Please hit us up on Twitter. Give us your thoughts, your feedback. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-O-O-O-F. 23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. Leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com, where we post the podcasts. You can also rate us and review us on iTunes, and we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. Hey, Phil, maybe I'll see you at the game on Saturday, eh?
Yeah, maybe, and maybe if you want to stay over or something. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll grab a brewski or two. Hopefully, we can see you guys at the games. Hopefully, we get two wins this week. Seashells and balloons, everyone.